This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the les, bi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
And on tonight's program, we have Sally Huffer from the Montrose Counseling Center, who will be discussing programs at the center and giving an update on the follow-up meeting of the Futures Conference. And then in the second hour, the special J.D. Doyle Queer Music Heritage. And this evening, J.D. has an exclusive interview with Levi Kreis. All that and This Way Out and News Wrap from This Way Out after the BBC News.
BBC News with Lira Goga. Reports from Kuwait say a battle over the succession to rule the Gulf state has come to an end after the ailing Sheikh Saad al-Abdullah agreed to renounce his right to the throne. The move paves the way for the Prime Minister and long-time de facto ruler Sheikh Saad al-Ahmed al-Sabah to become the country's new emir. The agreement came just hours before the Kuwaiti parliament was due to consider constitutional measures to remove Sheikh Saad. Nicholas Rocha has the details.
The succession of the last emir, who died earlier this month, has proven to be more difficult than expected. There's been a long tradition that the two branches of Kuwait's al-Sabah dynasty alternate in power, and Sheikh Saad al-Abdullah, who comes from the Salem wing, should have become the next emir. But his health has been failing for several years now, and the cabinet thought it best if the prime minister and long-time de facto ruler, Sheikh Sabah al-Ahmed al-Sabah, became the country's new emir. He comes from the same wing as the late emir, the Jabir branch. But both branches of the ruling family have now agreed on a successor, and Sheikh Saad is expected to renounce his right to the throne in favor of Sheikh Sabah.
The Ford Motor Company has unveiled plans to lay off up to 30,000 workers and shut down 14 plants in North America as part of an attempt to turn around its loss-making operations. The cuts will hit nearly a quarter of Ford's North American workforce. The restructuring is aimed at reducing the company's losses and ensuring its long-term profitability. The chairman of the company, Bill Ford, pointed out the focus of the changes.
It's a strategy that calls for sacrifices at all levels of the company. It puts the customer first. And it demands we look beyond short-term financial targets to create sustainable, profitable change in our North American business.
Voting has been taking place across Canada's five time zones in elections that could bring a radical political shift in the country. Polls suggest the opposition Conservatives, led by Stephen Harper, are likely to win, dislodging the governing Liberals for the first time in almost 13 years. Mr. Harper, who strongly identified with Western Canada, formed the Conservatives out of remnants of several right-wing parties, is on record as supporting the Iraq War, opposing social legislation such as gay marriage, and defying Canada's political elites traditionally based in Ontario and Quebec. The governing Liberals, who've had a strong economic record under the Prime Minister Paul Martin, have suffered persistent allegations of corruption. You're listening to the news from the BBC. The new Bolivian president, Evo Morales, has fulfilled one of his main election promises by appointing several members of the indigenous Indian community to his cabinet. Mr. Morales, who was inaugurated as Bolivia's first indigenous head of state on Sunday, announced his 16-member cabinet on his first day in office. Daniel Schwandler reports from La Paz.
There will be zero corruption and zero bureaucracy, said President Evo Morales as he announced his new cabinet. The people are tired of that, he said. Our work is to dignify politics. The ceremony at the government palace in La Paz was a mixture of the formal and informal. Some wore suits and ties or military uniforms, some their traditional indigenous clothes, and the miners their metal helmets. They spoke a mixture of Spanish and indigenous languages. Evo Morales, in his now well-known stripy alpaca wool jumper, said that ending corruption and nepotism in Bolivian politics are at the top of his agenda.
A crowded passenger train has been derailed in mountainous parts of Montenegro, killing at least 41 people and injuring more than 180. The accident happened near the capital, Podgorica, when four carriages came off the rails and plunged into a ravine 100 meters deep. Matt Proger has the details.
Shortly before nightfall, a packed train carrying more than 200 passengers derailed as it left a tunnel in the mountains just short of the Montenegrin capital, Podgorica. The leading carriages plunged nearly halfway down a 100-meter-deep ravine above the Morača River. Among the wounded were scores of schoolchildren returning from a skiing holiday. Dense forest, driving wind, and bitterly cold temperatures hampered the rescue efforts. Brake failure was cited as the cause of the crash, and the country's transport minister announced his resignation late on Monday night.
England's Football Association has said Sven-Göran Eriksson is to step down as the national football coach by mutual consent after the World Cup finals this summer. The announcement follows allegations he's reported to have made about corruption at the highest level of the game. On Sunday, a British newspaper alleged that during a conversation with an undercover reporter in Dubai, Mr. Eriksson and his agent named three Premiership clubs which they believed were involved in making illegal payments during player transfers. BBC News.
This is Queer Voices for January 23rd, I believe the date is.
That's correct, Glenn, and thank you. This is Deborah Bell.
And Jennifer Renee.
And we're on our short staff this evening. I don't know why that is exactly. The people have other
commitments. I'm not that short.
No, you're not short at all. And we're going to be talking with Sally Huffer of the Montrose Counseling Center about some of the things that came out of the Futures Conference that took place during Empower. And there was also recently a meeting to discuss, well, okay, we did that, and these are the things that we talked about and that came out of it, so what are we going to do next? And first we're going to talk a little bit, though, about a really hot topic, which is the movie Transamerica. Jennifer, you got to see it already.
Yes, I did. I went to the second showing of it on Friday at 3:25. I found the movie just excellent. I will say that for me, I found several parts of it very uncomfortable, but that was a personal thing. I found that the audience as a whole seemed to really enjoy it. From the very beginning, I had to laugh at some of the portrayals that Felicia Huffman was in her acting was excellent. The main thing was that she got it so close to right. That's the part that I really was amazed at.
And that is a man that was transitioning in to live as a woman, living as a woman, and she really did a lot of work to study that and work with the trans community, and I think was brilliant. And, of course, we left the station last week just in time to get home to watch her acceptance of her award from the Golden Globes.
Yes, she did. I was so moved by that.
I burst into tears.
Oh.
I just absolutely burst into tears when she said,
yes, I'm going to read the quote. This it says, "I know this is Felicia Huffman. I know that as actors, it is our job to usually shed our skin, but I think that as people, our job is to become who we really are. And so, I would like to salute the men and women who brave ostracization, alienation, and a life lived on the margins to become who they really are." That was hard to read.
Yeah. I mean, I just absolutely burst into tears because, you know, I have so many close friends that are transgendered, and that just really touched me. And I'm glad that she really understood the part and was able to do such a good job.
She did. And I read on some further information. She had, when we had interviewed Duncan Tucker 2 weeks ago, he had said that during a period of time she had gone off to study, and I found out what she was doing. She had gone to several of the individuals who train help to train men who are going from men to women in how to act, how to walk, how to talk. She actually went to one in San Francisco who happens to be a personal friend of mine, and to learn how to become a man, becoming a woman. Yeah, I hope y'all got that. A woman, it sounds like Victor Victoria.
In a way, yeah.
And, but she was a very good student at that, and she did it impeccably in the show.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that is really good. And, of course, we are having such a big year with movies that either have gay or lesbian identified people and trans people. We have the Brokeback Mountain and, of course, the Capote film, which doesn't deal with it's not about his homosexuality. It's just that he was a gay man, and he wrote that brilliant book, and it depicts the story, and also a big award winner as we're in the award season.
Oh, I think the interesting part about the award season is that there are going to be a lot of straight people win awards for playing gay people.
That's true.
What happened? They didn't call us anytime.
Well, hopefully that'll be next, is that, you know, people can play the parts when they have a trans person. It'll really be a trans person playing.
And before we move on, I wanted to say it's Transamerica is showing at the Angelica. Got it. I'll get it one of these days. Pardon out there.
The Angelica downtown.
And so if you haven't seen it, go see it. We do have a few posters here at the station. Anybody interested? Ask for me, and I'll see that you get one of them.
And just a reminder again, at the Alley Theater, Culture Clash in America, if you miss it, you have missed quite a show. These guys are brilliant and enjoyable theater, but with such a strong, powerful message. And it plays through the 29th at the Alley Theater, 713-228-8421. So, yes.
One other thing, going back to what you said, that maybe someday there'll be gay characters being played by gay people. There was a study done of 3,000 high school and college age students, and on several items. And one of the main things was is that they were very supportive of gay marriage. And so, you know, we may have lost this generation, but the next generation's coming up.
Do you know where that study was done? She hands me a press release here. And was this from the Chronicle? American teens are conservative on abortion, but overwhelmingly support gun control and gay marriage. And a recent study by Hamilton College, a small liberal arts college in Clinton, New York. Well, there you go. Well, don't get me started on the abortion topic, because here as we face the 33rd anniversary of Roe v. Wade, and we have a Supreme Court nominee who very well will destroy that, the rights that came from that, and could have an effect on us in so many other ways. Well, Sally Hoffer from the Montrose Counseling Center, and tell me again your title. You're the specialist of operations and development of all good things.
I'm community projects specialist.
Community projects specialist, Sally Hoffer with the Montrose Counseling Center. And Sally, you were very involved with what was called the Futures Conference, which really set a homosexual agenda, GLBT and allies. I think there was a Q in there too.
They called it GLBTIQA, which stood for gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, GLBTI, intersexed, Q, questioning, and allies. Yes.
Right. And what was really, I know Phyllis Fry and Jack Falinski, and I believe Ray Hill, were involved in that as well, and several other community leaders met over a course of several months and devised the agenda for discussion. Phyllis worked very hard to
edit the resolutions that were presented.
Right. And then those resolutions were voted on during the Empower actual meeting that took place, and several things came out of that, and some of them are taking place at the Montrose Counseling Center. One of them was the, which we talked about before on the program, was this idea of matching GLBT youth with foster parents that also identify as JLBRT. So
Or who are GLBT friendly.
Right.
Exactly. Well,
so has it happened yet? Have we matched somebody? Have
not found a
home?
We've got probably about a half a dozen adults and families that have signed up for the program, and so we're in the process of adding more. But just to go back a little bit, what this really stemmed from was when we had the Futures Conference meetings, and the meetings prior to the conference started taking place in October or November of 2004. And I missed the first meeting, but I attended every other meeting after that. And we talked about, you know, different, they called them vertical groups. And one of the vertical groups was youth issues. Right around this time as well, some people in the Montrose community were very much concerned about the street youth population, the homeless youth population. And even Mayor White and Council Member Ada Edwards had a meeting to discuss the homeless youth population in Montrose. And so we were talking about how a lot of youth these days feel they have no other choice. Either they've been kicked out of their homes, or they really do feel like living on the street might be safer than living at home. Or certainly, you know, even if they're not kicked out of their homes, there might be so much conflict in the home because somebody is gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender. And all of the studies show that in major metropolitan areas like Houston, that the youth population, approximately anywhere between 25% and 45% of homeless street youth self-identify as gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender, which is an astounding figure if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
Yeah, so we started looking at that, and I mean, right now, and in the past, when people call the switchboard, when these young adults call the switchboard and say, you know, I'm being kicked out of my home, what can I do? The only options that we've been able to tell them in the past, because they're under the age of 18 and because parental consent is required to access so many services, we were able to give them information about Covenant House, which is a faith-based program. And I believe they could only stay there for a defined period of time before they needed parental consent. And so many of our GLBT youth would walk in and feel uncomfortable and then turn around and walk out. And I should probably stop for a moment and say that's really GLB, because the transgender people were not welcome unless they, you know, went to the facility for their biological, you know, gender, and they were not able to dress and act as they wanted to. And so, I mean, what kind of an environment is this if we're talking about people being able to heal and, you know, be able to progress in
yeah.
their lives?
There was very little safe space available for
right.
These kids.
Right. So we talked to, you know, a lot of them couch hop for as long as they can, you know, and become, you know, flop in a lot of places like that. But a lot of them, you know, after a period of time, end up choosing to live on the street. And in some cases, they exchange sex for a room to stay for the night. They, you know, they
survival sex.
Exactly, survival sex is what it is. And so then, of course, they're at much greater risk for, you know, drugs and alcohol, getting a sexually transmitted infection, HIV and AIDS.
They violence.
Becoming the victim of violence,
right.
Exactly. So, you know, we looked at this issue and thought, you know, what would be ideal? And we thought about ideas such as, you know, putting together a shelter. There's a lot of liability issues concerned. And so one of the things we thought about was, well, what if we could pair up these youth when they're being kicked out of their homes, or when they're making that decision, or if they're already on the street? What if we could pair them up with GLBT, IQA, friendly, or, you know, GLBT families, adults, and they don't have to be paired off. They don't have to be, you know, a couple. But if they're interested in becoming a foster parent, why not try to catch these people before they make these decisions, or try to get them up off the street and into a home? And so we started talking to a couple of gay-friendly licensed foster care agencies to see if this was going to be possible. And they were extremely interested in us, you know, working together. So what we're doing right now is, before we can actually place the youth into the homes. There needs to be a screening process, and you know, so since the licensed foster care agencies, this is their area of specialty. That's what they do. You know, they screen people. We will provide education. The Montrose Counseling Center will provide education to their staff, and we'll provide education to the adults who want to be parents. We'll also provide, when we have enough parents so that we can open this up and say, you know, now, yes, we are looking for youth who are looking for this. Because, as I say, right now, somebody calls in, we have very limited options.
Do you have some people now on lists that are interested? I mean, talking about families that would be interested?
We've had about a half a dozen people inquire about it, and all they need to do is call the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard, and let me give you that number.
Always have this number at hand.
Yeah, anybody that's listening should program this into your cell phone. And the reason why I tell people to do that is because you might want to program it into your cell phone right now because you're looking for, you know, you want to participate in this foster care program. Or you might be looking for a gay-friendly attorney, or you might be looking for a photographer so you and your partner can be photographed.
Are you going to give us the number?
There are so many things that you can find out by calling the switchboard.
Right.
Sometimes even if you're just like, what kind of events are going on, or
exactly,
what kind of services, not only at the counseling center but all over town,
exactly,
whatever is available. It's
and
a great resource.
So if you have that number, because you're looking for something simple like that, then you'll have the number in case of an emergency.
Okay.
So I urge everyone, I've been talking so that people could get out their cell phones to program it.
I have my pen.
Oh, I'm getting all spastic here, and I can't.
Have you learned how to use that? Phone yet?
Well, I think I just erased Ray Hill's number, which is a terrible thing to do.
Let him call in.
I think even more important number for me than the switchboard number. But okay, let me try this again. It wants me to get out. We want to just give the number, Sally.
Yes, is everybody out there ready?
Gay and Lesbian Switchboard,
713-529-3211.
And so if someone wants to be a foster parent, or if you happen to be one of the youth that qualify for this program and you're looking for a place, then you can get maybe on a list to...
Well, we're not putting together a list for the youth because what we
That's going to be through the agency.
Right, that'll be through the agency. However, when we're ready to accept youth into the program, and trust me, when that happens, I will be begging to be on your airwaves so that we can get this information out to the youth. And certainly if somebody were to call now, we would do our best to try to help them find a place, but we won't be able to get them into foster care. We will probably have to refer them again to Covenant House or refer them. And we talk a lot, let me back up just a bit, we talk a lot with the Hatch youth, and we talk to a lot of kids who call the switchboard, who say...
Hatch
is the youth group.
It's our drop-in program at Montrose Counseling Center that meets on Fridays and Sundays. And there's usually an hour of programming and an hour where they can break down into small groups and discuss things that are going on. We talk to these kids about... Ask them to think about, you know, the cost-benefit analysis of coming out to their parents. Because if they're under the age of 18, they need to seriously think about, if I were to come out, is it possible that I might be kicked out of the home?
Right.
I mean, have I heard my parents say, no son of mine is going to be gay, and if my son were to come to me and tell me he's gay, you know, I'm going to, you know, I'm not going to provide roof over their head or, you know, whatever. If you have some inclination that your parents are going to kick you out over this, then we highly suggest that you consider... before you make the decision to come out to them, because I know a lot of people want to live as their authentic selves.
Right.
Oh, absolutely.
But let's keep in mind the safety factor and having a roof over your head, and if your parents are willing to pay for your college, these are things that are, you know, a leg up on success and your future.
Right. So this is a program for both runaway and throwaway kids. And
so-called.
Yeah. And so another thing that came out of the Futures Conference was a program taking it another level for seniors. Tell us
exactly
about that.
Well, you know, we noticed that we have some social groups for seniors here in Houston and a couple of groups that help with health care needs. But we wanted to figure out what are the needs of seniors? And, you know, so often we hear about seniors needing to go back into the closet because they want to access care, whether that's assisted living, whether, you know, it is just going to the hospital. You know, a lot of times they're not able to be out and open and disclose information about their partner, or they may just be afraid. And so with the senior program that we're starting up at the Counseling Center, we've hired some part-time outreach people to go out and meet with people in the community and let them know that services are available for them. We're talking about a population, in many cases, I think about people of my mother's generation. When she was growing up, people didn't share their problems at all. They were ashamed of them, and so they didn't talk about them. They didn't seek help. It was, you know, the family embarrassment or something like that. And I think that in some cases, people of that generation, you know, don't seek help. They don't want to bother anybody else. And so they kind of keep to themselves. And we need to let them know that there are services available. And we are working with a lot of healthcare providers. We did a survey a few years ago at the Montrose Counseling Center where we contacted a number of nursing homes, which I guess are now called assisted living facilities. And we asked them, you know, how do you handle your gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender clients, you know, that come in, the consumers that come in. And we were told, and I can't remember the actual statistic, but a fair majority of them said, well, we don't have any gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender clients. And when we pursued a little bit further and said, what do you mean you don't have any? And they said, well, they're not having sex. The people here don't have sex. Well, number one, they're wrong.
I was going to say, they're not dead.
And number two, you know, we had to do some education with them to let them know that this isn't just sexual. It is affectional, and it's about who a person is.
It's a cultural identity.
Yeah, it is about sex, and it isn't about sex.
Right.
And so we did some education. We realized that, you know, those are some of the things that we need to do, and we're looking, you know, to the future and see what are the needs of this community.
Well, before we let you get away, and we had to reschedule you for tonight because we ran out of time last week, so I thank you for being here. Besides, last week was so rainy. It was so bad. And this is a much better evening.
No, it's just cold.
If someone didn't attend the Futures Conference and they haven't been part of it, can they still get involved?
Absolutely. We had a meeting this last Saturday at the community center. And
I thought it was the week before.
This last Saturday.
Oh.
Was it this last Saturday? No, you were right. It was the week before. I'm sorry. Everything's blurry because I had training for the switchboard this last week, and it was the week before. And we talked about some of the progress that we've made, but we all decided that we don't want to have monthly meetings about this, but we thought we would have another forum to discuss this. So we had three new people show up that weren't a part of the Futures Conference, but they're very much interested in participating and trying to see some of the resolutions that were passed move forward. And so the next meeting for this is going to be on February 11th. I believe that's the Saturday, and it's from 1 to 3 o'clock at the GLBT Community Center at 3400 Montrose. I don't remember the suite, but it's on the second floor.
Yeah, like 207. Yeah.
So 207. Get off the elevator, turn left again, and you can't miss it.
And straight on till morning. There you go. Well, thank you, Sally Huffer from the Montrose Counseling Center, for being with us on Queer Voices. Stay tuned for This Way Out and Queer Music Heritage.
Thank you.
I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Rick Watts.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending January 21st, 2006. While many national and regional governments have pushed for bans on same-gender marriage, a new law pending in Nigeria not only mandates 5-year prison sentences for anyone contracting or facilitating such unions, but punishes anyone who advocates on behalf of LGBT rights of any kind. Nigerian Information Minister Frank Nweke told the BBC that his government was taking what he called this preemptive step because of developments elsewhere in the world. In most cultures in Nigeria, he claimed, same-sex relationships, sodomy and the likes of that, is regarded as abominable. The move was also seen as a reaction to developments in Nigeria's far more queer-friendly neighbor, South Africa, whose constitution specifically includes anti-bias provisions and whose high court recently ordered lawmakers to enact marriage equality legislation. The draconian measure was strongly endorsed by Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo, who cited Christian and Muslim principles as the basis for the legislation. It was supported by his political ally and friend, the notoriously anti-gay head of the Anglican Church in Nigeria, Archbishop Peter Akinola. The bill was developed and written by the Federal Executive Council and will be forwarded to the National Assembly for its expected endorsement.
An update to Estonia's family law is set to ban gay and lesbian marriages and block recognition of those performed in other countries. Several non-governmental organizations have banded together to fight the legislation and to demand passage of a civil partnership law for same-gender couples. Their letter to government officials charged that the family law banning same-sex marriages runs counter to the Constitution and fuels injustice, intolerance, and discrimination in Estonian society. The ban is a major retreat from the principles of democratic society and deserves a broad negative reaction across the European Union, the letter said. It also said that 4 to 6% of Estonian society has sent a clear message of having a strong need for an institution that would define the partner's rights and obligations in same-sex families. Family means love, a safe home, a socially secured position, common values of humanity, protection of children and assets. What kind of country would not want to support such an initiative?
And Estonia could indeed be courting trouble. The European Parliament this week passed a resolution warning that EU member states who fail to treat gays and lesbians equally could face legal action in the Court of Human Rights. The MEPs also ordered the European Commission to propose how legally married same-gender couples' rights can be protected if they decide to reside in member countries where those marriages are not recognized. The resolution called on member states to take action in the fight against homophobia, sexual orientation discrimination, and to promote and implement the principle of equality in their society and legal order. While it did not mention any countries by name, the resolution referred to a series of worrying events in a number of EU member states where gay prides or equality marches were banned and led to leading political and religious leaders using inflammatory, hate, or threatening language. New Polish President Lech Kaczynski has been outspokenly homophobic. As mayor of Warsaw, he actively blocked pride marches there the past 2 years. Latvia recently passed an amendment to its constitution restricting marriage to a man and a woman. And Lithuania, where a similar amendment has been proposed, has also banned pride demonstrations. Polish MEP Konrad Szymanski opposed the debate on homophobia as a waste of time and claimed that there is no need to organize some sort of union to protect homosexuals, as it would, quite on the contrary, undermine European integration. Openly gay British MEP Michael Cashman called for even stronger action, saying, "Where EU countries breach the human rights of gay and lesbian people, the Council of Ministers must consider action to suspend member states' membership of the EU."
Italian gays and lesbians and their supporters rallied for marriage equality in Rome this week. The crowd, estimated by police to number about 1,000, demanded both legal recognition for lesbian, gay, and unmarried heterosexual couples, and that the Pope not inject himself or the Church into the upcoming general elections there. "Let's free love from religious phobia," read one banner. The Vatican newspaper L'Osservatore Romano predictably denounced the rally as a provocation. Ministers in Premier Silvio Berlusconi's conservative government issued scathing condemnations. "These demonstrators are really nauseating," Reforms Minister Roberto Calderoli told the Italian news agency ANSA. "Family is a serious thing, based on love between a man and a woman." Pope Benedict continued his now regular attacks on gay and lesbian couples last week, saying it was a serious mistake to obfuscate the value and functions of the legitimate family based on marriage by attributing legal recognition to other forms of legal union for which there is no real social demand. But queer activists hit back with a statement reading, What a pity the Pope has not taken advantage of the occasion to affirm that Christianity means love and acceptance of all people, it said. The Pope has closed the door, but in any case, history does not stop at the gate of St. Peter's.
There are courtroom battles over same-gender marriage in several U.S. states, and equality advocates won an early skirmish in Maryland this week. Baltimore City Circuit Court Judge Brooke Murdoch ruled that a 1973 statute that defines marriage as between a man and a woman violates the state constitution. She stayed the opinion, however, until a higher court can review her decision, so gay and lesbian couples in Maryland can't make wedding plans just yet. As elsewhere, most pundits expect the issue to ultimately be decided by the state's Supreme Court. Although tradition and societal values are important, Murdoch wrote in her ruling, they cannot be given so much weight that they alone will justify a discriminatory statutory classification. When tradition is the guise under which prejudice or animosity hides, it is not a legitimate state interest. Republican Governor Robert L. Ehrlich Jr., who faces a strong challenge to his re-election bid from Baltimore Mayor Martin O'Malley, criticized the ruling and reiterated his belief that marriage should be an exclusively heterosexual institution. He did this week propose legislation that would help same-gender couples make medical decisions for one another, saying it was an alternative to a more comprehensive bill he vetoed last year that was supported by the queer community. Eric Stern, executive director of the National Stonewall Democrats, complained that a vital registry at Target department stores would offer same-sex couples more benefits than this watered-down election year ploy by Governor Ehrlich. Same-gender couples are also suing for marriage licenses in the states of California, New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, Iowa, and Washington. That state's high court is expected to issue a ruling at any time.
In Washington, perhaps strangely, gays and lesbians do not enjoy basic anti-discrimination protections. But the state house took steps toward correcting that this week. A bill to add sexual orientation to a state law that bans bias in housing, employment, and insurance was passed by a 60-37 vote, with six Republicans joining 54 Democrats for a wide margin of approval. Businesses with fewer than eight employees would be exempt. Queer activists have been lobbying for an anti-discrimination bill for more than 30 years. The most recent attempt failed in the Senate last year by one vote. However, Republican Senator Bill Finkbeiner announced earlier this month that he would switch his vote to yes, and pundits have said that all but assures its passage. Democratic Governor Chris Gregory said she will sign the bill if it gets to her desk.
And finally, children of gay and lesbian families plan to take part in the traditional White House Easter egg roll in April. But religious conservatives are going splat over that faster than Humpty Dumpty. Action alerts about queer plans to crash the event have been circulating on right-wing websites. It's important for our families to be seen participating in all aspects of American life, said Family Pride Executive Director Jennifer Chrysler, whose group is heading up the push for inclusion. She said Family Pride has received a flood of hate-filled, venomous messages telling us that our families aren't welcome. It's not surprising that the right would be against it, she said. They are very clear about wanting to make our families invisible. The egg roll, in which children use spoons to push colored eggs through the White House lawn in a race, has been an Easter holiday tradition in Washington since the mid-19th century. A limited number of free tickets to the event are usually handed out on a first-come, first-served basis. An ugly confrontation between GLBT families and religious conservative opponents seems almost inevitable. I'm a parent first, said Chrysler. I would never want to put my child or anyone else's child in harm's way. When asked this week if President Bush would take some action to block the children of lesbi-gay families from participating, White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan would only say, "We'll talk about it as we get closer." We wonder what Jesus would have to say about all of this.
That's News Wrap for the week ending January 21st, 2006. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written this week by Greg Gordon and John Beaupre and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Rick Watts.
Many of them came out to the blossoming sounds of women's music. They'll be here to celebrate those continuing journeys later in the program.
Live from the Starfield International Ballroom of the Beverly Hilton Hotel, welcome to the 63rd Annual Golden Globe Awards.
Desperate Housewives, from the avowedly twisted mind of openly gay creator Mark Cherry, won the Best TV Comedy Series trophy at this year's Golden Globe Awards, but it was the movie categories that created the real buzz at this year's ceremonies, presented by the Hollywood Foreign Press Association on January 16th. In an unusual year of several politically conscious motion pictures, Brokeback Mountain led the pack with 7 nominations. It didn't win for Best Score, Best Actor, or Best Supporting Actress Drama, but it did win the Best Screenplay Trophy for Larry McMurtry and Diana Ossana.
My deepest gratitude to the members of the Hollywood Foreign Press for their generous response to Brokeback Mountain and for giving us this high honor.
Brokeback's second award of the evening went to composer Gustavo Santaolalla and lyricist Bernie Taupin for Best Song, A Love That Will Never Grow Old. The irony of getting a Golden Globe from Clint Eastwood, whose tough guy movie persona was born in the Western genre, was not lost on Brokeback Mountain Best Director Ang Lee.
Wow, getting this award for this movie from the man, that was too much. Wow, this year I have to say, I have seen and loved so many of my colleagues' films that make this award from Hollywood Foreign Press so much more special, because I think this has been an amazing year for American cinemas. So I just want to give my first thanks to my fellow filmmakers for strengthening my faith in movies and in the power of movies to change the way we're thinking.
The quirky Philip Seymour Hoffman won for Best Actor Drama in the title role of quirky gay writer Truman Capote. And Desperate Housewife Felicity Huffman took home the Best Actress Drama trophy for her starring role as male-to-female transsexual Bree in Transamerica.
Duncan Tucker wrote a film about coming home to your family and your community and ultimately to yourself. My family is my 6 sisters and my brother and my mother, Grace, who thinks I'm on a TV show called The Women. I know as actors our job is usually to shed our skins, but I think as people our job is to become who we really are. And so I would like to salute the men and women who brave ostracism, alienation, and a life lived on the margins to become who they really are. Thank you.
To cap the evening, Brokeback Mountain producer James Sheamus accepted the Best Picture Drama Award.
Oh, man, I stand here next to a great Westerner, Diana Ossana, my fellow producer, and we are stunned in thanks to the Hollywood Foreign Press, to Stacey Snyder and Ron Meyer and everybody at Universal who went, sure, let's make it. Thank you. My personal thanks to our incredible cast, union cast, Jake, Annie, Heath, Michelle, and our astonishingly efficient and attractive crew. Thank you. And to you, Ang Lee, you let Diana and me help you make a movie that has made our mothers so proud. And for that, what can we say?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Miami Herald columnist Leonard Pitts may have said it best in encouraging everyone to see and judge Brokeback Mountain for themselves. I can report that it was as shattering and powerful as advertised, he wrote. People were moved. Nobody threw up. Brokeback Mountain, Capote, and Transamerica are up for awards at the British Academy Film Awards, or BAFTAs, on February 19th. It remains to be seen how the queer-laden Golden Globes wins will influence those or Oscar voters. Oscar nominations will be announced on January 31st, and the awards will be handed out on March 5th. For This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon.
Hi, this is Greg Louganis, and you're listening to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine.
similar events in the past had the right idea, but event planner Pat Hogan wanted to see something with a more Western flavor. This Way Out correspondent Nancy Rosenblum was among more than 160 women who heeded Hogan's call last September to the first ever West Coast Canadian Gathering and Conference in Vancouver, British Columbia, presented for and by lesbians 50 years old and over.
Nancy Rosenblum here at the first West Coast Women's Conference for lesbians 50 and older and our younger friends.
Here come the lesbians, here come the leaping lesbians.
Jean Duncan from Portland, Oregon, how are you this evening?
Great.
Now let me ask you, what brought you all the way up here from Portland, Oregon to lovely Vancouver?
What I have really enjoyed about the conference is being with women over 60s and just hearing their stories has really been inspiring.
Because you can have fun like you have fun with a woman.
So, tell me, what brings you all the way here from Iowa?
I don't know. I want to meet some new friends. If I could find a partner, that would be nice, too.
And how old are you?
81.
You relate to a woman.
How old are you?
60.
60. Why are you here all the way from... Oh, you live here, you lucky gal.
I live here.
You are so lucky. So tell me what you hope to get out of this beautiful gathering.
Oh, I just think that it's wonderful that we're all of a certain age and that... And it feels good to get together. I remember years ago being at a place called Queenie's and sitting nursing a drink by myself and watching other women together. It was very exclusive. Nobody invited me in. But this atmosphere is very inclusive.
It is.
We've matured.
I get a new point of view for a love that's true. I'll go find a woman who's just as sweet as you.
Mickey from Vancouver, what brings you here?
I'm here because I want to be around women my own age.
And how old is that, Mickey?
50.
50, you're
yeah.
just a
I'm
babe.
Just a pop, I'm just
you're
a pop. But,
made.
You know, middle-aged lesbians are very invisible in our community, and a chance to be with everybody here is, I wouldn't miss it ever.
Because you needn't grow much older to know there's nothing to be not like a woman's shoulder.
Charlotte, you come all the way here from Texas?
I sure did, honey.
What brings you all the way from Texas to Vancouver?
The love of women.
How old are you, Charlotte?
I'm 75, and my partner is Arden Eversmeyer. We're both retired, and we travel all over the country doing oil herstories of women 70 plus.
Finally caught up with the producer of this incredible event, Pat Hogan. Is there anything that you hope lesbians that have come here take away with them?
Well, I hope that women who are very closeted or sort of closeted, I hope that they can feel comfortable about being a lesbian. I hope that women can organize around issues that are important to them. This is what this kind of conference allows, is to network and to bring women together around issues.
And that is exactly what's happening at this conference. There is nonstop networking going on and a tangible excitement that just goes from one woman to the next to the next. And as for the workshops, don't even get me started on the broad range of topics.
So tell me, what are you doing your workshop on?
Sex after menopause for the lesbian woman.
And how is sex after menopause for the lesbian woman?
As frequent as we can get it.
So in other words, sex after menopause is doable.
Ah, and even more enjoyable. Older women know more, care more, pay more attention. We have more time. We have learned how to love ourselves better than we ever did at 30. And when we love ourselves, we can love other women.
Sweet darling.
I'm doing a workshop about writing the lesbian memoir.
Tell me what you would like women to take away from your workshop.
I would like people to feel that their life stories are worth telling, because they are.
I'm doing a workshop on immigration issues for folks wanting to immigrate to Canada.
I'm sure all the U.S. citizens will be at that workshop. Diane from Brooklyn, New York. Did you go to that immigration workshop today? How'd you feel about that?
You know,
Chris gave a really great workshop, and all of the women there seem to have the same feeling that we weren't moving because we feel oppressed as lesbians. It's really about the political climate right now in the United States.
What about if Bush was no longer president? You still feel like you got to get out?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I don't know. Right now, yeah. You know, you come here, everybody's happy. People are really, like, easygoing. The politics here are so great. It was like coming to a free country. It just seems like a better way to live.
And part of what makes Vancouver such a great place to live, aside from its large and out lesbian and gay communities, are its out and proud city councilor, Ellen Woodsworth, who was the guest speaker at the Friday luncheon.
Was it easy to get elected as an out lesbian?
Yes, I didn't have any attacks, but I've been very active politically on social issues for all my life, so there wasn't something that they could bring out of the closet and attack me with.
And seeing as we're at the first West Coast Women Over 50 and Their Younger Friends conference, how old are you?
I'm 57.
57, and how do you feel about being here today?
Oh, it feels wonderful to be here. It's just great to look around me and see all these very experienced, wise, seasoned women who I know have affected such enormous change and are going to go on to do even more things with their lives. So it's just a pleasure to be here.
Talk about inspired. I know I've done more dancing here than I have in years. And because all the workshops have us actively participating, there's the promise of going home inspired from more than just song and dance.
I just had a very stimulating workshop with Margot Dunn on lesbian artistic communities and talking about what we would like in the way of a creative community amongst lesbians and how we use the modern technology to facilitate that, film and the internet and emails, and we signed up to sort of have a continuing conversation between us.
And tell me your name and age.
Jillian Smith, and I'm 61.
How are you?
I'm great, thank you.
What's your name?
My name is Ruth.
Where are you from, Ruth?
I'm from Victoria.
And how old are you?
I am 61.
Have you enjoyed any workshops so far?
I have. The Before Stonewall political stuff, because I actually, even though I'm Canadian, used to hang out in New York in the very early 60s, the late 50s, and so it was like a memory going down memory lane for me, and it was cool. It was neat. I liked it a lot.
So far, how has it been for you turning into an aging lesbian?
Every year just gets better and better.
Laurel from Victoria, B.C., how you doing?
I'm doing just fine, honey.
Oh, honey, already? How nice. Tell me, Laurel, how old are you?
I'm 59. I'm going to be 60 soon.
Fantastic. And so you're here celebrating that.
I am.
What workshops have you enjoyed here at this conference?
The dating and the flirting.
Hi, Carolyn Anderson. How are you?
I am just fine. I'm at a lesbian conference. How could I not be?
What brings you here from Calgary?
Lesbians over 50. One of the things that I find at home in Calgary is that lots of times women over 50 kind of disappear. And it's like they must not be lesbians around anymore. What, do they get married and become straight, or what happens to them?
Are they stolen?
Well, exactly, yeah. Or do we survive past 50? And I know that friends of mine have said that, like, we don't see anyone around, so what happens to them? So when I heard that there were going to be a whole gathering on the West Coast, that's why I'm here.
What workshop did you just attend, and how was that?
I attended Lucy Blue Tremblay's breast cancer exam project. It was fabulous. And I love the energy that she creates by just getting women to share their stories and help us feel like we're family.
To everyone's delight, Lucy also entertained one afternoon.
I'm moving in your neighborhood.
But it was on the last night when Chris Williamson sang what has become a lesbian anthem, Song of the Soul, and women spontaneously jumped from their seats and started circling the dance floor hand in hand, singing along with Chris, that I, along with everyone else there, knew this conference was going to go down in her story. This is Nancy Rosenberg.
So, sing this song.
planning for the next West Coast Canadian Gathering and Conference in Vancouver, British Columbia, scheduled for September 7th through 10th, 2006, is already underway. For more information, email Pat Hogan at path@lynx.net. That's path@lynx.net. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Sherry Lunn, Rick Watts, Nancy Rosenblum, John Beaupre, Rex Walkner, and Graham Underhill contributed program material. Thanks also to Rita Gonzalez. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to find out how you can help keep us on the air and choose from some unique queer history and culture CDs that you can own as our thanks. We've just added Stranger Than Straight from our last few programs as a specially produced half-hour collectible. That's thiswayout.org. To sign up for our weekly email program information messages and or our monthly This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For our associate producer, Lucia Chappell, and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on 3PVR Mill Park, Victoria, WFCS, New Britain, Connecticut, Free Radio San Diego, California, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT. And we have just a few minutes before we go to J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage.
This is Deborah Bell.
Jennifer Renee.
And we were talking with Sally Huffer of the Montrose Counseling Center, and she gave that very important number that you should all have on your cell phone or written down by your desk, 713-529-3211. That's the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard. And they can connect you to the services that are at the Counseling Center and then all kinds of other programs and resources in the community. And Jennifer, what tidbit do you want to share tonight before we sign off and turn it over to Queer Music Heritage?
Well, I want to thank Sally Huffer of the Montrose Counseling Center for being with us this evening. And join us next week for Queer Voices. Greg Chapman will talk with representatives of the Makuru Art for AIDS fundraising project. And Deborah will be talking to Coy Tao and Rodney Walters of the Greater Houston Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce and their plans for 2006. J.D. Doyle will interview Jay Pondrette about the Houston Women's Festival Winterfest 2006, scheduled for February 4th. And Joan Devlin will interview lesbian author Jill Dolan, author of Utopia in Performance. Remember, Queer Voices and other KPFT programs are archived and can be listened to via the Internet by going to www.kpft.org.
And if you want to know more about the gay agenda that came out of the Futures Conference, it's available.
You mean we have an agenda?
Well, you know, it may not be the agenda that some people have accused us of having, but it's the one that we're developing for our own community.
You mean the real one, not the one they say we have.
Exactly. And it's available at the pridehouston.org or the Houston GLBT Community Center.org websites. And then you'll know more about what's going on in the community and how you yourself can get involved, because that's what makes community, is each of us being involved.
One other thing, the Houston Transgendered Unity Committee is having its banquet April 15th of this year. That's a Saturday night. Get your tickets for the banquet and come and support the GLBT community and the scholarship fund.
And thank you for being with us on Queer Voices. Stay tuned for Queer Music Heritage with our very own J.D. Doyle.
Good night.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston.
This is Queer Voices on KPFT, and this segment is called Queer Music Heritage. I'm J.D. Doyle, and welcome to my 6th anniversary show. I want to start out this show by featuring several lesbian and gay acts from a number of years ago who are no longer on the music scene, but should definitely not be forgotten. And I'm going to finish up with a special interview with a fairly new artist named Levi Christ, who I think we're going to hear a lot more from. The opening song was called We Won't Be Silent and is the title track from the debut album by a group called Your Girlfriend. They were a lesbian band from Kentucky, and I love the story of how the group was able to release its first album. They had been playing locally in Louisville for a couple years and had attracted quite a following. So in the summer of 1989, they took an approach that is so true to the spirit of the women's music movement. They staged their own music festival as a benefit to raise money to record their album. As I said, that album was called We Won't Be Silent, and it really set the tone for all three of their albums, and that spirit is one of the reasons I like the group so much. It was important to them to sing songs that reflected both the personal and the political aspects of being out as lesbians. You'll see the variety of their music and also how political their music can get in this medley I put together of some of their songs.
Hey, Kevin, are you going to heaven? Were they gonna let you go yesterday before you said you were gay? They used to let you teach in Sunday school at the first stained glass windows. Yeah, they thought you were cool. You made the right music for so many. You play your own note and set off their fears. Well, so long now, buddy, you said you were queer.
That special, Your Girlfriend Medley, featured 8 songs from all 3 of their albums. From We Won't Be Silent from 1989 was The Ballad of Kevin and She's Not Somebody's Wife. In 1992, they released L Words Spoken Here. And from it, you heard Take Another Step, Dyke Time, and L Word. The very catchy Lesby Bop can only be found on a various artist compilation from 1993. That CD featured a who's who of women's music artists and was produced by Jamie Anderson. It was called A Family of Friends. And in 1995 came the 3rd and last album by the group called Not Afraid to Love. And from that one I brought you The Extra Bedroom Blues and Fairness. The principal singers and writers for the group were Carol Kramer and Laura Shine. And Laura can still be heard on the airwaves, but in a different fashion, as she's one of the main voices on Louisville radio station WFPK, where among the several shows she hosts is one called Women Waves. Again, I was very pleased to tell you about the group Your Girlfriend. Next up is an artist from the Southwest. Bill Folk wrote this song for the first lesbian and gay rights march that was held in Phoenix, Arizona in 1981. It's called We Are Here.
We are here, and we're not going away. We are here, growing stronger day.
Admittedly, the song We Are Here sounds very dated by now. But remember that in 1981, the idea of a gay anthem was very new. That song was released on a 7-inch, 45 RPM record. Remember those? Its flip side was called Woman to Woman, Man to Man. Bill Folk was very active politically in the Phoenix gay community until he moved to San Francisco in 1983. There he became the first executive director of the Stop AIDS Project. In 1991, he released a full-length album, And while he may not have been the greatest singer, I really like the album. It is consistently upbeat and very lyrically out all the way through. Here are my two favorites from Bill Folk's CD, starting with one called Man Lovin', Lovin' Man, followed by the title track, Looking for Mr. Right.
I'm a man loving, loving man. Give and get my loving when and where I can. I'm a loving lover, yes I am. Every night, going to the bars looking for Mr. Right. But ever since I met you, everything's so fine. Now we got each other's loving all the time. You put your arms around me and it feels so good. Feels just like the way I always knew way it would. Being held so closely with your tender touch makes me realize just why I love you so much. I'm a man, loving, loving man. Give and get my loving when and where I can. I'm a loving lover, yes I am. I'm a man, loving, loving man. Thinking of the times when I was so alone. Being with you shows me just how much I've grown. Learning to be honest in the things I say. Saying that I love you makes my night and day. You're the kind of guy that I can love the best. You're the one who's different, not like all the rest. I see you smiling, I know it was meant to be. So why let you be you when you let me be? I'm a man, loving, loving man. Give and get my love when and where I can. I'm a loving lover, yes I am. I'm a man. Last until in death we part. Still I can't help think we got a real good start. Through life's ups and downs we will survive somehow. So let's enjoy our loving in the here and now. There are times in life where things can get real tough. All the love we have may not be enough. The feelings where the good and bad we can't discard. But we can still make love whenever things get hard. Hoping you'll meet someone to fulfill your dreams. Someone who will care, someone to be there. An endless task, or so it seems. People pass you by, you keep on asking why. It's plain your dream is out of sight. You're looking, 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 looking for Mr. Right. You're looking, 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 looking for Mr. Right. Everywhere you go, someone wants to know what you're doing out all alone. They don't want to hear the blues, they just want to hear the news that someone you can call your own. You have no regrets, you're not taking bets, cause your dreams may all come true tonight. You're looking, 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 looking
Again, those two songs were from Bill Folk's 1991 album, Looking for Mr. Right. Sadly, his 45 and the album are all we have to remember him by musically, as he died in 1999. In 1974, a musical opened off-Broadway and ran for a year and a half, attracting a lot of attention. Writer-composer Earl Wilson set his goal to write the most liberated, most sexually free show he could, and he did. He called it Let My People Come. The show included simulated sexual acts of all persuasions and many songs that then and now are definitely not ready for radio. One of the cast members was cabaret singer Larry Paulette, and his solo song from the musical was called Take Me Home With You.
I come here every night and I squeeze into the crowd. Stand beneath the only and I whisper this out loud. She is getting kind of late. Last call is overdue. Tommy wants to close the bar. Won't you?
In 1977, 3 years after Let My People Come, Larry Paulette released a solo album called What Makes a Man a Man. It was released on the mainstream label Vanguard. And while it was not the first openly gay album released by a major label, it was obvious that even they considered it a bold act. In the press kit for the album, it states, "At Vanguard, we have always been willing, if not indeed eager, to take risks. Wherever we found talent, we found the means to share that talent with others. We released the now legendary The Weavers at Carnegie Hall, while those performers were blacklisted, because we believed in them. We believe in Larry Paulette, too. Paulette is one of the precious few performers to deal openly with homosexuality, but what he is really dealing openly with is love." The title track from the album, What Makes a Man, was written and made famous by French singer Charles Aznavour. It gives a gripping, melancholy look at the social alienation of the world of a drag artist.
My mom and I, we live alone. A grand apartment is our home in New York City. I have to keep me company. Two cats, a dog, and parakeets. They're very pretty. I help my mother with the chores. I wash, she dries, I do the floors. We work together. I shop and cook and sew a bit. Though mom does too, I must admit, I do it better. At night I work at a strange bar, impersonating every star. I'm quite deceiving. The customers come in with doubt, wonder what I'm all about. But at evening, I do a very special show where I am nude from head to toe after strip-teasing. Each night the men look so surprised I change my sex before their eyes. Tell me if you can, what makes a man? A man. Around 3 o'clock or so I meet with friends to have a bite to eat and conversation. We talk and empty out our hearts on every subject from the arts to liberation. We love to pull apart someone and spread some gossip just for fun, or start a rumor. We let our hair down, so to speak, and mock ourselves with tongue-in-cheek and inside you. It's not amusing. There's always those to spoil our games by finding fault and calling names. Always accusing. They draw attention to themselves at the expense of someone else. It's so confusing. Yet they make fun of how I walk and imitate the way I talk. Tell me if you can, what makes a man a man? My masquerade comes to an end when I go home to a bed again, alone and friendless. I close my eyes and think of him and fantasize what might have been. My dreams are endless. We love each other, but it seems the love lives only in my dreams. It's so one-sided. Yet in this life I must confess, the search for love and happiness is unrequited. To be the judge of what is right for me. Tell me if you can, what makes a man?
All the shades were pulled and drawn away down tight. From within the dim light cast, two silhouettes on the shade. Oh, what a lovely couple they made. He put his arms around your waist, held you tight. Kisses I could almost taste in the night. Wondered why I'm not the guy whose silhouettes on the shade I couldn't hide. The tears in my eyes. Silhouettes, 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 silhouettes. Shop. They marry, you're on the wrong block. This isn't Third Avenue, this is Lexington. I'm sorry. I rushed down to your house with wings on my feet. Loved you like I've ever loved you, my sweet. Now that you and I would stay, two silhouettes on the shades, all of our days. Two silhouettes on the shades.
Again, that was Larry Paulette. Following What Makes a Man was a very lighthearted version of the Odie Silhouettes. Unfortunately, I have no idea what became of Larry Paulette after the 70s. One of the sad things about our musical heritage is that so much of it is just lost, and that even applies to searching for information on the internet. If you would do searches for any of the acts you've heard so far, Your Girlfriend, Bill Folk, or Larry Paulette, you'd find next to nothing. Perhaps a few mentions on an old archive playlist or on a record catalog, but no meaningful information. I wish that were not the case, but that's one of the reasons you'll hear artists like that on my shows.
Hey, this is Levi Christ, and you're listening to Queer Music Heritage on KTFT in Houston.
And this is a good time to invite you to check out my website. If you visit it while you're listening, you can see the playlist and follow along while looking at photos of the artists and recordings. I've always considered our music history as a visual as well as an audio experience. Again, that's at www.queermusicheritage.com. Also, for more very queer programming, please listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Friday night, Saturday morning from 1 to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. Now, the rest of tonight's show will be devoted to a very fun interview with rising artist Levi Christ. I first became aware of him in 2002 when I was in Los Angeles visiting my audiophile co-producers Chris Wilson and Christopher David Trenton. We went to a wonderful play called Southern Baptist Sissies, and Levi performed the play's theme song at the end. We spoke to him briefly after the show, and I picked up his debut album, but I'm getting a little ahead of myself. Levi Christ is a Tennessee boy who's been through a lot. Raised Southern Baptist, he was on his way to become a Christian artist, but that nasty old homosexuality got in the way. He spent 6 years in an ex-gay program before finally getting out and coming out into his own. Moving to L.A., he almost immediately found acting work in a touring company of Rent and has had nice roles in a couple of movies. And he got involved in the hit play Southern Baptist Sissies, written by Del Shores, who gave us the movie Sordid Lives. Levi issued a self-released album around that time called Rough Around the Edges. Focusing more on music, he was signed with Atlantic Records and spent a year, as they say, in development, almost finishing an album. He was frankly relieved when the sub-label he was on, Elektra, folded and he and many others were let go. he would have had to stay deep in the closet on that label. That pretty much brings us up to late last fall, when he released a new album and landed a Plum TV appearance, which he'll tell us about. But that's enough intro. Let's get to the music. His new album is called One of the Ones, and the song we've been listening to in the background is called With You. Tell me about your new CD.
It's a collection of songs about relationships that I've been in with various guys that I've crushed on or dated or loved with all my heart. I chose to keep it very intimate, just the piano and the vocals, and hoping that the experiences can are relatable to the listener in a very intimate way.
How would you describe your musical style to someone who hasn't heard it?
I would describe my musical style as definitely influenced by the church. Growing up with gospel music, I think you learn initially that music is expressed from a place of deep commitment and passion, being that it is expressed from your beliefs. And not that, you know, being not in the church now, I find that even still, the things that I write and the way that I perform is so very much a product of the church. I always want to try to put something positive in there, but I also want to be very honest and universal, you know, and try to craft lyrics that are relatable to anyone who's listening. Overall, I just want it to be something that people say, this is raw, this is honest, and this is vulnerable, and I can totally relate.
In November, Levi was on an episode of Donald Trump's show, The Apprentice, so of course I had to ask him about that.
I was in New York City working with a couple producers that were shopping me the labels, and there's a lot of label interest and whatnot, and one of the producers was called by Mark Burnett Productions, as the two teams were each given a producer and a songwriter for their own resources during the challenge. And he submitted me to the production team, and it was probably over 1,000 submissions. I didn't expect to hear anything, but it was a nice surprise to get that phone call. And as soon as the phone call was received, I mean, I was kind of whisked away into what became a 36-hour whirlwind.
Did you feel manufactured during that process?
You know, I was afraid of that, but it turned out, no, I didn't at all. The team that had the challenge of writing and recording and producing and packaging a song of mine and presenting it to XM Radio, they took great lengths to get to know who I was. They sat me down for 2 hours, and they just really tried to understand why I write the way that I write, what my musical influences were, and the spirit behind which I create, and the styles that have influenced me. And I think they nailed it, and they ended up with a song that I could easily hear in my own repertoire.
Is it on the CD?
Unfortunately, no, because the Donald owns it. So I have had, J.D., so many requests via emails, probably over 600-700 for that song. And luckily, these people are also buying my CD, but it's just been unavailable, and I don't know if they have plans to release it or put it on iTunes. I think it's so silly that they didn't.
When did that episode of The Apprentice air?
That was November 17th, and I had tried to plan my own CD release the same night. So the challenge for me was trying to coordinate everything that I had planned for my own release. You know, I obviously wasn't allowed to promote my own thing, but just hoping that people would actually see what was going on there and, you know, go to Google and Google me and come to my website and actually begin to purchase. And luckily, it's kind of like worked really smoothly.
So it's only been a month. What do you think the impact has been being on that show?
It's been fascinating to see the responses. You know, you got a show where you're like literally maybe there 7-10 minutes. You don't even see the full gamut of what you can do, but just the association of it, just a little 7-10 minute infomercial was all that I needed to get people's interest. I've had so many emails of people that were just kind of had the TV on in the background doing their own thing and heard the voice, immediately responded, went and found me, and made the purchase and have, you know, written me back saying, you know, I really relate to this CD. I love it.
How would you compare this album to your first one?
This one was a lot harder for me to write because I made a concerted effort to be really vulnerable in writing about relationships that weren't very comfortable for me to write about, because there's been a lot of heartache here and there in the last 3 years. And the songs on Rough Around the Edges were, you know, some of them were a lot more fun. It didn't really force me to delve into a private place.
Yeah, they're not as personal.
No, they're not as personal, and they're certainly not as revealing.
That was the biggest difference from that album to this one.
Well, the song that caught my attention is Queer Boy.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it would be kind of fun to write a song from a straight guy's perspective who basically was frustrated at not getting any by the women, you know, and gay guys are always best friends with the girls, and he comes to this gay guy and says, look, you know, you gotta help me get an in here. I wanted to play with it a little bit and raise an eyebrow, but do it in a comical way.
How did your audience respond to that song?
How? Anytime I ever played that song, people would just laugh, and I think a lot of it was because, you know, there were people who knew about me in my personal life, and they thought it was hysterical that I was taking the reversal take.
They were saying, who are you kidding?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And from Levi's first album, Rough Around the Edges, here's a little bit of the song, Queer Boy.
That's why I'm asking you, queer boy, why do you get all the ladies? That maybe I should try to be a queer boy. Hey,
the next song I want to hear about is from the new album, and it's called Hardly a Hero.
Hardly a Hero is actually kind of funny to talk about because me and this girlfriend of mine, Darcy, sat down and watched Spider-Man 2 and decided that we would try to write this sappy song about his whole dilemma between being a hero and falling in love. But it turned out actually being a viable song, and we kept it.
Just an ordinary man thrown into a life I didn't plan. Suddenly my world has changed. I'm unprepared to make my way. My resolve is growing weak. So unsure of who I'm supposed to be. The one who takes the noble path. This is the only thing I know to do to make it through. But I need you to believe that beneath this bravado, I'd still give anything to have a chance to get you back. And I'm hardly a hero for that.
How biographical are your songs?
Very biographical. I think most of my songs, I think very seldom do I ever write from observation, from watching others, from, it's usually a direct experience of mine that creates the lyric that I'm writing. And that's always been the case ever since I started writing, since 12 years old. It was an outlet for me to express things that I was going through as a young child. Checking myself into Exodus International when I am in junior high school and going through that inner turmoil for 6 years, the junior high and high school, my first year of college, it just turned out that songwriting was the outlet I had, the place of peace that I found, you know, and so I don't know that I'm able to divorce that now. I think it's always going to be very biographical.
I've read that on the 10 songs on the new album, each is about a different guy.
I've been busy, huh? Yes, this is true. Not that I was actually involved with all of them to a great degree, but, you know, there's one who's, it's about a straight friend of mine who I fall in love with. I Should Go. Another one is about a couple that I, that are two wonderful friends of mine, and I've watched their relationship. They've been together, Steve and Carrie, for 13 years, and they have provided me with an example of a love that is, it's divine. It's, you know, guys I've dated in New York City, they ended up on there. You know, there's a little joke with all my friends that, you know, stay away from Levi. Don't date him, because the minute you do, he's going to write a song that airs all your dirty laundry.
Or if you've already written a song, next.
Exactly. I only date for songs. Jump in, get emotionally involved until I have a good song from it, then I move on. But it's not true, JD. I don't do that, I swear.
I have analyzed your album. I went through it, analyzed the songs, and here's what they are about in order. Falling in love, being in love, lost love, lost love, lost love, wanting to be in love, falling out of love, falling in love, looking back on love.
Wow. I don't think I've broke it down that clearly before.
What does that say about you?
I don't know what it says about me as a whole. I know where I am now. You know, I know that through falling in love and falling out of love or lost love and all the experiences that kind of make up this project as a whole, it's left me in a place where now more than ever I'm so clear about what I want. And the clearer I get about what I want, the harder it is to find. I think that's true for every one of us. And, you know, relationship, experience by experience, we kind of begin to hone in on the kind of experience we want for ourselves. And it is always trial and error. You know, you can't figure that out until you get your feet wet. And I've definitely got mine wet.
you got wet feet.
Exactly.
Of what song that you've written are you the most proud?
The song I'm most proud about from a songwriting craft perspective would probably be I Should Go. I think that's probably the strongest song from a songwriting standpoint.
Here we go, isn't it familiar? Hadn't had someone to talk to in such a long time. And it's strange what we have in common. And your company was just the thing I needed tonight. Somehow I feel I should apologize, 'cause I'm just a little shaken by what's going on inside. I should go before my will gets any weaker and my eyes begin to linger longer than they should. I should go before I and this hour holds more meaning than it ever could. I should go, I should go, baby, I should go.
I've got to hear about the song Man Out of Me.
Yeah. After my first year of college, I had dropped out of Exodus International for the healing of the homosexual. I had been kicked out of college because a dorm roommate of mine had found out that I had been studying the issue of homosexuality from a personal aspect of wondering whether God really even cared or not, and he thought that was appalling, and went to the board of directors and told them, and I was very active in the Christian organizations in college, and also had a Christian album that was about to come out at the time, and they dropped me. They kicked me out of school, and then an intern at my Christian record label also went to the same college and heard this and told the label, and the label dropped me. And so all of a sudden, I just leave the Christian world with everything stripped from me at 19, and I fall in love for the first time. And it turns out that the first guy that I fell in love with, I now move in with, and we start building a life together, turns out to be an abusive alcoholic. And, you know, coming from a graduating class of 5 people in a small town of Oliver Springs and being completely sheltered in the Christian world and Christian music and living my life in the church, I didn't have the facilities to know what to do with that kind of situation, with domestic violence. I never even given thought to domestic violence, let alone ever thought I would be a part of it in a gay relationship. That's actually how my mom found out that I was gay, because she began to put 2 and 2 together and confronted me with it and actually helped me leave and helped me get out of the relationship. But it was a very empowering experience, on the other hand, because if anything forced me to learn how to respect and love myself.
it was coming out of something like that. And writing Men Out of Me, I wanted to not spend too much time in the darkness of that experience, but I wanted to focus on the empowering aspect of that. Because I think that those things can be brought to a place of positivity if you use them that way. And for me, it was such an empowering experience at the end of the day.
That song seems to be the, I guess, the rawest on the album, for exposing the most.
Yes, and it was a very difficult decision to include that on the album. And even now, JD, I've only ever performed that song one time, and it happened to be the performance that was recorded on the album. I haven't performed it again still. Not yet, anyway. But I have a premiere performance in Los Angeles for my new album on January 16th. And that will be the second time I've ever sang that song for the public.
Well, I'm glad you included it.
Yeah, me too, because I'm actually getting a lot of positive feedback from people who have been in those in that circumstance and have found it as a comfort and an empowering experience listening to it. So I'm so glad that I ended up putting it on there.
I can't at this second think of another song about a gay relationship about abuse.
I don't think it's a subject that's often mentioned.
For a male to male, this is good.
I'm glad that you think so, because I've been a little taken back that there isn't a lot of voices that I've heard anyway, and perhaps there are out there and I just haven't come across them, but I haven't heard a lot of speaking out about this, you know?
I could see this very well, very easily reaching someone in that situation and being a help.
I hope so. I hope so, because, you know, it's out there and it happens. Now, I hope that the song really does kind of reach out to somebody, because it's something I don't think is being spoken to much about.
Something that I never said, a story that I've never shared. I was only 20 years old, he was a love affair. Soon became a humble home, wrecked with animosity. Took it to the bottle, turned around and took it out on me. And I was just a boy, scrawny little boy, a naive, faggot little boy, too confused by love to leave.
Some artists think this far ahead. Do you know what direction your next album might take?
I do know that. Yes, I do know the kind of direction my next album is going to take, because when I finish an album, JD, I go straight into writing for the other album as quick as I can. Because
more guys, line up.
Yeah, exactly. But no, this one is actually going to be a lot sexier. I've got songs that I'm really wanted to approach anywhere from the darker side of sex to the political issues to speaking out about organized religion. It's going to be a lot edgier. It's going to be pretty sexy too, but it's definitely more of a, you know, it's going to be full band. I'm going to come back to things like Queer Boy and No Apologies, where it's got kind of the funkiness, the funk feel of it, and pull that into a full band into it, and really kind of, you know, hopefully create a real in-your-face product with this next CD. I am real excited about it.
Gee, I can't wait for that. I'm down to the last song, but before I get to it, I want to thank you all for listening, and I want to especially thank Levi Christ for the wonderful interview. And, as I had expected, the interview was so good that I could not fit all of it into the radio version of this show, so my internet listeners could hear an extended version with a lot more comments and additional music. That, of course, can be found at www.queermusicheritage.com. And as always, if you have questions or comments about any of the music I featured, please write me at qmheritage@aol.com.
This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices on KPFT Houston. I'm going to end this segment with one of my favorite songs from Levi's new album. And again, you can find out more about Levi Christ and his album, One of the Ones, at www.levichrist.com. And Christ is spelled K-R-E-I-S. My favorite song from the album is probably Love in Another Light. And here's some final comments by Levi talking about that song.
The one that I am most connected to myself would be Love in Another Light, because if there is a song that kind of says where I am right now, of being, of putting, of everywhere I've been in the past, it is what it is. Now I know that I want something that is substantial, that is real, that is lasting. And that song's really close to my heart right now.
Turn down the dial. I don't want another. Listening to something I had enough of. It's all the same. A big misconception. Thinking I'd find what I was looking for. Love. It's not just a fix anymore. Man needs to feel something more. So maybe it's time that I tear down the walls, open my eyes. I want another love and another life. There's gotta be more to this life. Let me know love and another from the ruin of manic pursuits that left nothing to gain. In desolate bars, drowning in whiskey, back rooms with boys that don't have a name. At some point we all want the same, to live and let go of the pain.
Listening to J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, a feature presentation of Queer Voices. Queer Voices is heard each Monday at 7 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Networks station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, and Jack Valensky, with remote correspondents Joan Devlin in Iowa and David Elliott in Washington, D.C. For more information about guests, events, and organizations mentioned in the show, visit queervoices.org. Some of the music you heard is listed or available on J.D. Doyle's website, queermusicheritage.org. Be sure to listen every Saturday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Hi, my name is Matt Kerr. 17 years ago, on the day I was born, I was adopted. I was lucky. Because today, in Texas alone, there are over 3,800 other kids waiting and hoping every day that they'll have the same chance I was blessed with. By considering adoption, you can start writing one of the most important chapters in your life and in the life of a loving child. Open your heart. Open your home. Consider adoption. For more info, please visit AdoptTex.com. Thanks.
Have you ever wanted to discover what KPFT is like during its most energetic moments? Now is your chance. Starting February 1st, KPFT kicks off its Winter Pledge Drive, and we need your help to make it a success. You can put your spare time to use this February by volunteering to answer phones during the drive. Our phone volunteer trainings are Wednesday, January 25th at 6 p.m. and Saturday, January 28th at 10 a.m. The sessions will be held at KPFT Studios, 419 Lovett Boulevard. Your efforts make a difference and can make this a fun and successful drive. Evenings and weekends are available. Again, those phone volunteer training dates are Wednesday, January 25th at 6 p.m. and Saturday, January 28th at 10 a.m. You are tuned in to commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
Would you like the opportunity to win $8,000 for college and a brand new laptop computer, all while meeting inspiring and famous Latinos? Apply for the Hispanic Heritage Youth Awards. All you need is to be in good academic standing and to demonstrate how your Hispanic heritage has influenced your life. Apply online at HispanicHeritage.org or stop by any Subway restaurant for an application. It's so easy.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.